The following program may contain material that is unsuitable for some audiences. Listener discretion is advised. Aftermath Radio should not be considered a substitute for services provided by a licensed mental health professional. Good afternoon and welcome to Aftermath Radio, brought to you live from the K-Beach radio station at Cal State Long Beach.
All right. I'm conflicted right now. I'm like, this is the season finale of Aftermath Radio, right?
Spring season finale.
Right. And so I'm wondering, do I come in with like my pillow talk voice or my energetic radio guy voice? What
a
do you think?
A little of both.
Like an energetic pillow talk voice?
Yeah.
All right. Aftermath Radio, Dr. Robert Shug, Assistant Professor of Criminal Justice and Forensic Psychology here at Long Beach State. Aftermath Radio, where we talk about all things psychopathic. And if you would like to speak with us on our very special season finale show, our phone number is code 562-912-3541. That's 562-912-3541. You can Skype us at aftermath.radio. Your last opportunity to chat with Chant. Yeah, I know. We'll talk about that in a minute. We'll give you some pity time here. You can email us at aftermathradio@kbeach.com. I will be answering the emails today. And as always, we encourage you to visit our website, aftermathradio.org. Click on the radio link in the lower left-hand corner. And all of the podcasts, with the exception of the past 4 weeks,
are archived.
Oh, my God. I'm epically failing with that.
Wow.
I'll get those done after finals are done.
And then you're going to tell the new kids how to do it, right?
Right. Exactly.
It's all part of the master plan.
It's all part of my master plan to take over the world. All right. So anyway, very excited to have three special guests, three heavy hitters coming on later in the show. Dr. Dave Kossin, Dr. Leanne Liedem, and Dr. Paul Babiak. We're going to be doing the traditional wheel of controversy related to topics that are controversial in psychopathy. And Gigi Brar, is the wheel pulled out of the shed and oiled up and ready to go?
Let's see.
All right, good. The audience is excited.
Very.
Good. I don't know who we have for an opening act, but that opening act got that audience really pumped up. That's great. Okay. That'll be coming up at 4:30 our time. And in the meantime, I wanted to actually spend a little bit of time talking about you two, Chantal Fahmy and Gigi Brar, and sort of what's going on in your lives right now. And this is, you're basically, and there's really no like senior or junior designations as grad students. You're just sort of at the end of your journey. Mm-hmm. And both of you pretty much are. And I wanted to give you the chance to tell the entire world sort of what's going on with you now and what your plans are. So let's start with Chantal.
Why me first?
Because yours is a better story? No, I'm kidding.
What is going on with me? I have a lot planned this summer. First on the list is finishing my thesis. lots of travel plans. And then come August, I'll be moving to Phoenix to start my doctoral program at ASU, Criminology and Criminal Justice.
Do we have an applause sound?
No, but I have a rim shot.
This isn't a joke.
I know. It's not a joke.
Just kidding.
I keep wanting to
staying here with you guys.
So Chantal Fahmy is going to start her PhD at Arizona State University in the fall, and the whole department here is very proud of her. She literally had her choice of places to go.
Thank you.
And ASU is a fine establishment. I think
it's because of an amazing letter of rec.
That could have been it. The amazing $20 bill I stapled to the letter. And not to make it all about me, but I'm going to. I did attend ASU for 3.5 years right out of high school, right before I decided to quit and come out to LA and become a rock star, which didn't work either.
This is a real story, folks.
It is true.
Yeah, it is true.
I truly attended Arizona State University for 3.5 years.
No, and that wasn't the part I was saying was true. The rock star part.
Yeah. One of my epic failures in my life. But you'll like it there. It's hot in the summer, of course. But
so excited
really
for warm.
And there, the campus that you'll be attending is actually downtown. It's not in Tempe.
Where the party kids are.
Well, the party kids are in Tempe, aren't they?
Yeah, yeah. So
downtown
I'll be
is
away
more
from that. I'll need to be away from that.
So, like, more of the business, like the mullet hairdo, the business in the front and the party in the back, you're going to be more towards the front,
yeah,
right?
I'll be
the
Phoenix,
business end.
Tempe's, yeah.
Right. Very good. I'm very excited about you. Now, do you know who you're going to be studying with yet or what you will be studying?
We are still in the process, but drugs is my favorite topic to study. and I say that actually kidding, but I'm writing
but
my thesis on substance.
Right. And are there substance use specialists over there, or is there substance use research going on?
Yeah.
That's really cool.
Mm-hmm.
And we certainly wish you the best, and we're all very, very proud of you.
Thank you.
And I think me being the most.
I am.
Is Gigi blushing? I can't see her from here.
Not yet, but she will be.
Wait, what? I don't know. I just missed what just happened. Anyways.
So, yeah, I mean, that's a success story right there. So good. And then, Gigi, what's going on with you?
What is going on with me? I will also be working on my thesis and finishing it up next semester, but by next semester, I mean before next semester starts. And then I will, be finishing up one last semester here, TAing for Dr. Shug.
That's right.
And
I've recruited Gigi for my fall research methods class.
So, have fun with that.
Which Chantal performed expertly this semester, by the way.
So yeah. I will be TAing and in the summer be studying for my LSAT.
Right, so your long-term plans involve more going to law school.
Yes.
Very good.
For now. We'll see what happens this summer.
After you take the LSAT, you might have a change of heart.
Oh, yeah, I might have a change of heart. But
is this a good time for my lawyer joke?
Totally.
Yeah.
Oh. Yeah? Okay.
Wait, I was...
You got the rim shot ready?
Yeah, I got it ready.
What do you call 1,000 lawyers at the bottom of the ocean?
Oh, I've seen that. I mean, you've told me
You've
this.
Seen this?
I've seen this.
You've seen this audio joke?
I'm still waiting for the...
Let me try it again. What do you call 1,000 lawyers at the bottom of the ocean?
What?
A good start. There you go. No offense, Gigi.
I'm none taken. I'm
actually, if you do become a lawyer, then maybe you can offer me discount rates.
Me too. That's
I probably need lots of lawyering.
Yeah,
eventually.
Okay, good. So you're going to be here, G, for another semester. However, both of you will not be involved in Aftermath Radio anymore. This will be sort of your last show.
Yeah. And by sort of, you mean definitely?
Although we may sort
of... Are you sneak attacking us in the summer?
We may call you. We may call you at ASU. And we may have you do remote ASU broadcasts and asking people about what a psychopath is.
Down.
You're down for that?
Yeah.
In Arizona, everybody wears a cowboy hat and has a gun rack on their pickup truck. So.
That's not Texas?
Oh, maybe that's Texas. Very good. So we're going to have two brand new producers coming on board over the summer, and it's Danielle Slakoff and Paulette Iriarte, who actually were in studio last week, but they remained silent, which is funny because you originally did the same thing, Chantal. When you first came in here, you remained silent.
I did,
yeah,
when I was still feeling it out.
Still trying to figure out the vibe and kind of what to do and where you fit in.
And you know what? Now I just feel like I'm talking to you two, whereas before
you thought
I knew that there was an audience. I mean, I still know that, but I lie to myself now.
You kind of get over it.
Yeah.
I mean, you have
over
to.
It instantly.
Well, but it really is kind of like us three talking in a room.
Yeah.
Because that's kind of what's going
on.
That's
kind of what is happening.
But we appreciate everyone else listening
but
in.
But our real conversations in the office and otherwise are not...
Are not
appropriate.
No, not for the airwaves.
Diet Coke or Diet Pepsi.
That's one of our more appropriate.
Lid and straw or not.
All right. So let's see. What else? You know, I wanted to actually mention at least Brian Frederick, who I thought was going to stop by today. Ooh. Have you guys seen him at all?
No, he's in thesis.
Okay. Now, Brian Frederick, also grad student, also graduating, really played a key role in helping me get the show started 2 years ago. And actually, without Brian, there really wouldn't be an Aftermath Radio.
Agreed.
Now, Brian really scored in terms of his PhD program, too, right? And where is he going again?
Kent
University in...
Canterbury?
It's in England.
It's in England, yes.
Yeah, and so he's pursuing a degree in criminology, but is it more like a social justice type of thing? Or
you know what? I'm not exactly positive on that. He has told me, and I have heard him loud and clear, and it has gone out the other ear.
In one ear, not the other.
And I think there's at least an emphasis on cultural criminology.
Cultural criminology. Yeah. Okay,
that's
very good.
That's what he's going for, I'm pretty sure.
It just goes to show you that Aftermath Radio has a 100% success rate. Well, so far it's 66.6% success rate in landing our producers into prominent grad schools.
We'll figure out where G ends up next.
Gigi has potential for really ruining our
I know. I might just bring the stats down.
Don't do that.
Okay,
you're
just
better
got,
than that.
I got an email from Paul here, and he says that he's getting no signal from all the station. Not sure if it's me. Internet is working. Or at your end, Robert, can't hear your intro material or anything for that matter. So can you maybe run out in the... Somebody run out there and just make sure we're broadcasting.
Yes, that would be nice.
Because that's a good thing. If we're not going out over the air, if nothing's happening, this is all just for us. So while Chantel expertly deals with the situation, wanted to... It's okay?
I can hear us out here.
Okay. Anyway, just wanted to acknowledge Brian Frederick and sort of all the contributions that he made and all of the hassles and heartaches involved in getting something like this up and running. He really stuck through it.
Thanks, Brian.
Thank you, Brian.
For listening. I expect you to be.
I can hear us outside.
It's all good? Mm-hmm. Okay. All right, Paul, I know you can't hear me, but it sounds like the problem's on your end.
Maybe you can email
me. That's Dr. Paul Babiak, who will be on, actually, hopefully, in 20 minutes. And then, I guess, you know, in the last couple of minutes, then, anything you guys wanted to...
say to you, thank you.
Yes.
Well, you're welcome, but I was going to say...
Because, seriously, I have learned so much doing this, and not just about psychopathy, and not just about this other side of it that I... never would have, you know, the victims of psychopathy. I would have never thought about that. You just think about the interesting, cool part, you know, which is how the movies portray psychopaths.
And I want to add to that, like in class, when we learn about it, we don't get to hear about victims per se. So this just adds more to what psychopathy really is, or,
right,
you know, the effects of psychopathy. So,
well, you guys have really taken this on with a lot of maturity and respect and certainly open mind and kind of rolled with the punches. And I really do appreciate that. And I wish you both the best of luck, even though this is that sort of awkward thing where, like, you ever say goodbye to somebody on the street, but then you're walking in the same direction. So we have this kind of awkward sort of rest of
That's
the show.
It's not goodbye yet. It won't be goodbye until graduation. Well, kind of.
Right, right. Okay, I'm getting more emails that we're not on the air. So we're going to address this. We're going to go to break, and we'll be right back after this Aftermath Radio here on KBeach.
Hi, my name is Bob, and I'm a psychopath.
Hi, Bob!
Do you know what a psychopath is? Do you have one in your life? How would you know? Join Dr. Robert Shugg Mondays at 4 p.m. for Aftermath Radio and get the facts about psychopathy.
Okay, we're back. Aftermath Radio. Dr. Robert Shugg, Assistant Professor of Criminal Justice and Forensic Psychology here at Long Beach State. If you would like to speak with us, phone number. You think I know by now, right? Here you go, 562-912-3541. That's 562-912-3541. Skype us at aftermath.radio. Email us at aftermathradio@kbeach.com. And as always, visit our website, aftermathradio.org. Click on the link in the lower left-hand corner, and all our podcasts are archived there for your listening enjoyment. We have on the line a caller. Now, caller, are you there?
Yeah, hi.
Now, caller, I can't remember. Did we decide if we were going to use your real name or not? I didn't want to out you.
We didn't talk about it.
What would you like to do? And it's totally up to you. You want to make up a name on the spot, or do you want to go with your real name?
Just do my name.
Okay, so this is...
Yeah, let's go with it, because I might forget anyway.
Very good. So this is Jane, and Jane is... Now, Jane, we won't give away exactly where you are, but you're from... across the pond somewhere.
Yeah.
Okay.
That's right.
And you and I spoke briefly last week, and you've contacted us before by email, and you wanted to tell a little bit about your story in dealing with a psychopathic individual in your life.
Yeah. It's a really complicated story. I've had quite a life, really. So I'll probably try to tell you some of the framework as to what's gone on for me.
Okay.
How I became involved with a psychopath and what sort of happened, but not all of it. And there's loads of detail that I'll miss out.
That sounds good. So tell us how this all came about.
What prompted me to write to you was the fact that you mentioned studying schizophrenia.
Right.
You were doing some study about it, and I was diagnosed with schizophrenia in my early 20s. And I had two young children at the time, and I was in a difficult relationship with someone who wasn't working and who was selling cannabis, so I was smoking cannabis. And I lost a sister. She died. She had a brain tumour.
Mm.
And all these things contributed to a sort of breakdown, and I was offered the chance to go into hospital for a two-week rest, and ended up being diagnosed with schizophrenia.
Mm-hmm.
They said that I had a mental breakdown as well, I think, or a nervous breakdown. So I'd had these two things, they said, go wrong with me, and I was put on injections for a while, I think, and had tablets. But they didn't really do any good for me, really, because I felt as if I was becoming a bit of a zombie.
Mm-hmm.
And I started trying to commit suicide. I wasn't feeling supported by the partner, and he wasn't bringing the children to see me, and there weren't flowers, things like that, you know.
Right, right.
I think. Yeah, I tried to commit suicide, and I ended up jumping and fracturing my ankles.
Oh my
and
gosh.
Ending up in another hospital. Well, from there, one thing the partner did do for me was after I'd been on my back for a couple of weeks or so, and it was time for me to go back to the mental hospital, he said, well, where do you want to go? Do you want to go there, or to your mum and dad's, or what? I said, well, I want to go home to my mum and dad's, because I didn't want to go back to him. He was part of the problem.
Mm-hmm.
I couldn't cope with the children then. I wasn't able to walk.
Yeah.
And I went to my mum and dad's, and I never heard from the hospital again, thank goodness. So I was able to get back on my feet,
mm-hmm,
and lose the diagnosis and rebuild my life. And so I did some temping, and I started studying again, and I managed to get an access certificate that enabled me to go and do a degree at university. But I was still seeing my children as and when I could. And I did apply to the court for them to come and live with me, but I was turned down because they felt that perhaps I might have a relapse.
Right, right.
The illness, that sort of thing.
So how did this psychopathic individual come into your life then?
Well, it was in the third year of my degree studies, my first degree, and I was pretty lonely, and I ended up going on a chat line,
mm-hmm,
a telephone chat line. They were quite popular then, and I do regret it. I wouldn't recommend it. But this person who I believe to be a psychopath, he sounded the most normal person on there, and I agreed to meet up with him. And when I met him, I thought visual impressions are. I thought it was slightly autistic.
Hmm.
I think that's the right word, but I brushed it aside because he was very fluent, eloquent, and confident. And he was a manager, had a good job, and he was funny, and he seemed to be genuinely interested in me. So a relationship evolved, and I got pregnant, and I moved in with him. And I started noticing that he had all kinds of rage, like road rage, phone rage, shop rage.
He had a bad temper.
Yeah,
mm-hmm,
yeah. And I know this is one of the warning signs now for women who are getting involved with men like that, you know, that it will turn on you eventually.
Sure.
And, but I wasn't aware of it at the time. And communication between him and me broke down. I was saying things to him, and he wasn't hearing what I was saying. So I was having big problems communicating, and he would storm off and go off for hours on end, come back in the early hours of the morning and say he'd slept in the car,
mm-hmm,
which I'm not, I don't know if I believe that now. I don't believe, I think he was doing something else. But
did you get the sense that he was being deceptive to you often?
No, I think I was very naive. I tended to believe what he told me.
Mm-hmm. But looking back now, is there any evidence that he was lying to you on different occasions? Or?
Well, yes, there was. I mean, like, when we broke up, I went back to the house for some things, and there was a message from a woman on the phone at the house saying, "Oh, can you call me to the person I believe is a psychopath?" Asking him to call her, you know, pleading with him to call her and saying that she had cancer. And, yeah, that was that. So I thought, well, you know, something's been going on that I don't know about.
Right.
And,
well, Jane, we got started a little late here because of technical difficulties, but just in the last couple minutes here, what sort of advice do you think you could give other folks who might be in the same situation as you were? And I know you have a lot to say, and don't feel that you have to say it all now. We can have you back on again.
Yeah, that'd be great. Well, I got 3 points that I came up with. One's about no contact. You really need a heightened awareness of the ways in which a psychopath tries to get a foot under the door.
Mm-hmm.
You need to understand that they need you much more than you need them. And once you know what you're dealing with, you don't need them at all.
Right.
Their need to relate with you is motivated by their need to control you. It's not by a human need, and I don't consider him to be a human now. With my experience, any offers of gifts, money, practical assistance, it's all working on a psychological level to keep you under their control.
Mm.
That's hard to deal with because unless you know what's going on, you might think it's a human need in them for, you know, to relate to you, but it actually is just about control. They're just looking for information that they can use at a later date.
And did you feel controlled throughout this time with him?
Oh, yeah. Well, he was controlling in many ways, financially, through the children, verbally. You know, he either wouldn't discuss things with me or he would change the subject or, right. You know, he just wouldn't get to any point. You know, he wouldn't solve any situations that we were trying to deal with, that I was trying to deal with him.
Right. Well, Jane, we're going to have to cut you off here. I'm so sorry we got started late. But we'll have you on again in the fall, maybe then?
Yeah.
And we really appreciate you staying up so late to talk to us. I know it's a late night for you. Okay, Jane, we'll talk to you soon.
All right, then. All right. Thanks, Dr. Shug.
You're welcome.
Bye.
Bye-bye. All right, there you go. Coming up after the break, Drs. Leadham, Kossin, and Babiak with the Wheel of Controversy here on Aftermath Radio on K-Beach.
Hi, my name is Bob, and I'm a psychopath.
Hi, Bob!
Bob!
Do you know what a psychopath is? Do you have one in your life? How would you know? Join Dr. Robert Shug Mondays at 4 p.m. for Aftermath Radio and get the facts about psychopathy.
All right, we're back. Aftermath Radio. Dr. Robert Shug, Assistant Professor of Criminal Justice and Forensic Psychology here at Long Beach State. Area code 562-912-3541 is how you get a hold of us by phone. You can Skype us at aftermath.radio. Chantal looks pretty bored over there drinking her Gatorade. Someone needs to chat with her, right? You can email us at aftermathradio@kbeach.com and visit our website, aftermathradio.org. I'm very excited on this season finale episode of Aftermath Radio to have three very big names in the field of psychopathy. And I'm assuming they're on the line right now. Is that true? Are you guys there?
Yep.
Okay, great.
We're here.
Excellent. Okay, let me get the introductions out of the way. First, we have Dr. Dave Kossin, professor of psychology at Rosalind Franklin University of Medicine and Science. He's one of the co-authors of the Psychopathy Checklist Youth Version and has authored over 50 articles on psychopathy. His research focuses primarily on the cognitive, emotional, and interpersonal mechanisms underlying psychopathy. Dave, are you there?
Hello, Robert.
How are you doing?
Great.
Good, good. Next, we have Leanne Leadham, a psychiatrist, graduated from the University of Southern California Keck School of Medicine, trained in psychiatry at Harbor UCLA and Yale New Haven Hospital. Currently, she is visiting professor of counseling at the University of Bridgeport, and I believe that's changed. We might have to update
right.
this. So,
associate professor. I got promoted.
Excellent. Very good.
Hey, congratulations.
Thanks.
And she's on the board of directors of Aftermath Surviving Psychopathy Foundation and is the author of Just Like His Father, A Guide to Overcoming Your Child's Genetic Connection to Antisocial Behavior, Addiction, and ADHD, and Women Who Love Psychopaths. Welcome, Leanne. And,
she's,
and last but certainly not least, we have the golden-voiced Dr. Paul Babiak, industrial and organizational psychologist in private practice in New York. Dr. Babiak coaches and consults to executives and organizations on leadership development issues. He is author with Robert Hare of the book Snakes in Suits, When Psychopaths Go to Work. He's also authored several scientific papers and book chapters and speaks about the corporate psychopath to audiences around the world. Hello, Paul.
How are you, Robert?
I'm doing well. How are you doing tonight?
I'm feeling good.
Good. And I got all of your emails during the show, and we're just assuming that the signal was going out, but we don't know if it is for sure.
I'm still not getting it.
Well, the podcast folks will get it, so
yes.
At least there's that. Okay, so we have a very special edition of Wheel of Controversy tonight. On the wheel, on every box, I have taped a copy of the New York Times, and I'll explain why in a minute. But we know how it works. We spin the wheel, the topic comes up, and then we put the controversial issue up for you folks who bicker and fight about it. And the more drama you create between the three of you, the better our ratings are.
Okay.
So, G, why don't you give the wheel a spin? Okay, so we have the special rigged edition of the Wheel of Controversy. On every square is a copy of the New York Times, and the story here, this is ripped from the headlines, literally. Can you call a 9-year-old a psychopath? This is a New York Times story by Jennifer Kahn, and the three of you have read this over the weekend, so this is a little staged. Dave was actually planting the seeds of doubt of credibility of the Wheel of Controversy, actually, right before the show, just to point that out. Right, Dave?
Well, I didn't know it would be rigged.
Well, you're from Chicago. You should be used to that sort of thing, right?
You're right.
Oh, no, I didn't. No, he didn't. Okay, so story comes out in the New York Times about... now, I read over this briefly, and you guys probably know a little bit more detail than me. But, you know, the concept of labeling a young child a psychopath. And, you know, that in and of itself is very controversial. So who wants to start off?
I'm happy to start.
Great. What do you think, Dave?
I think it's a terrible idea to call a 9-year-old a psychopath. I'm a little surprised that the author of this piece got away with implying it's a reasonable thing to do, or at least reasonable minds can disagree about this. There is plenty of evidence that kids can have psychopathic traits, and much of the research on younger children focuses on what are called callous and unemotional traits, which really focus in on the affective component of psychopathy. We know some kids have callousness and a lack of emotion, and it is a serious problem, but it's very different from saying that they have full-fledged psychopathy, the kind of a personality disorder that's going to be with them for a long time.
Okay.
Maybe I'll shut up and let someone else speak, but I'm happy to say more.
Leanne, what do you think?
Well, I found a different aspect of that article disturbing. I guess on twofold. So I'll say this one and then would like a chance to say my other thing after.
Sure.
I am more disturbed about it from the other direction. I mean, we do know that some children have signs and symptoms of psychopathy, and those children later grow up to have issues, in the psychopathic spectrum. But this idea that every psychopathic individual who's, say, 30 and diagnosable could have been diagnosed at 9, I think hasn't been proven and is dangerous. Because, well, I was, just to give you an example, I was in court today and somebody said, well, because he wasn't diagnosed at 15, he can't be. That was another one of the list.
Hmm.
And so I think this idea that you can diagnose them by 9 or 5 or whatever they say is dangerous because it prevents us from seeing psychopathic adults if we saw that they were affectionate and didn't have problems as children, or we think they didn't have problems as children.
That's a really good point. Now, I heard Paul clearing his throat. Paul, did you want to jump in, or do you want to let Leanne do her next point?
No, continue, Leanne.
Oh, no one wants to argue with me on that one?
I do not want to argue with you on that.
Oh, wow. Oh, shoot. Okay, so then the other thing I found disturbing about that article was that they're all, the treatment center was very focused on rewards and punishments. Like, if only we could figure out the rewards and the punishments, we could fix these kids. And I don't, as a mother, I don't think that that's what's going to fix these kids. And in the description of the home life of that family, I saw things that I thought were telling. In that the brother disappeared and was a mile away and no one noticed where he was. That was part of the article. And you got the sense from reading that article that this was a family where the parents were doing their thing and the kids were playing over here, and everybody's in the home, but they're not together.
Right.
I think the at-risk child doesn't need a reward and punishment scale or schedule. I think the at-risk child needs a symbiotic relationship with his mother and his father, such that he's not left alone to figure out how to entertain himself. That the family time after school should be structured so that there's togetherness, full togetherness, until that child goes to sleep. That's my opinion, that the key to helping these children is a warm and loving togetherness relationship that involves playing with the child and being that, trying to get in that child's world and trying to be his or her, you know, best friend, in addition to, you know, having to do what you need to do as a parent. You have to have that loving relationship. And the mother admitted that she did not have a loving relationship with this boy.
Right. Okay. Points well taken there, Leanne. And Paul, what did you have to say?
Well, two things. First, on the last point that Leanne made, my read of the article was a little bit different than that. Excuse me, and perhaps I need to go back and reread it. But I got the impression that for years the parents, the mother in particular, but also the father, were doing all they could to demonstrate love to their child. I didn't get that they were unloving at all. So I'm going to have to go back and reread that. I got the opposite impression, that they were frustrated, that they had explored many avenues, many therapists, many diagnoses, trying to find out what was really going on with their child, but I did not walk away thinking that they weren't exerting appropriate parenting effort in that regard. That's just what I got out of it.
Well, let me jump in here real quick. So again, we're talking about this this New York Times article. It's dated May 11th, 2012, Can You Call a 9-Year-Old a Psychopath? By Jennifer Kahn. I just kind of wanted to put a little bit different of a spin on this then. So this article actually talks about other kids as well. One kid, one case described, okay, one boy who used a knife to cut off the tail of the family cat bit by bit over a period of weeks. The boy was proud of the serial amputations, which his parents initially failed to notice. When we talked about it, he was very straightforward, and this is from Paul Frick, who most of us here know, or at least have met. He said, I want to be a scientist, and I was experimenting. I wanted to see how the cat would react. Here's another case. A 9-year-old boy named Jeffrey Bailey pushed a toddler into the deep end of a motel swimming pool in Florida. As the boy struggled and sank to the bottom, Bailey pulled up a chair to watch. Questioned by the police afterward, Bailey explained that he was curious to see someone drown. When he was taken into custody, he seemed untroubled by the prospect of jail, but was pleased to be the center of attention. So back to you then, Dave. Are you saying that even a kid who's engaging in behaviors like this, you still feel sort of apprehensive about putting a label of a psychopath on them?
I do. And I don't want to just pick on the article, because there are many good things about this article. They've certainly consulted a lot of psychopathy experts. They're putting a lot of the research out there. But one of the things that's a little scary for me is, and I hope this is not accurate, it sounds as if one of their assessors is using a psychopathy screening device to decide whether someone has psychopathy or not. You know, one of the things about these screening devices is that they're often, self-report measures, or they're simply a parent checklist or a teacher checklist, so it can be filled out by somebody who sees a youth primarily in one context as opposed to integrating information across contexts. Again, we don't know exactly what they did in that case. I suspect if this sounds like a horrible act, and it certainly sounds like it was a horrible act carried out with no remorse, no concern for the well-being of the victim, and that's, despicable and horrifying. But no one act is ever sufficient for a diagnosis of psychopathy. Psychopathy is supposed to be a personality disorder, a syndrome that reflects behavior across multiple domains and across time. And there are any number of reasons that somebody might do something, horrifying on one occasion.
Okay. Leanne, you want to jump in?
Well, I was struck by the fact that the two cases you brought up proved my point. What was a 9-year-old doing being left alone with a 2-year-old?
Mm-hmm. That is a
good
point.
what were the parents doing not noticing that the child had a knife or whatever utensil he was using and was torturing the cat? I mean, that wouldn't happen in my house because my son is closer to me than that. I watch him more closely than that.
Plus, you would notice
it. Also, I just wanted to go back and to say that I agree that the parents in that case were trying. So, and I also do not blame the parents for the child's disorder in any way. My only point was to say that I didn't think the parents were being given the right kind of advice about how to intervene in a child like this life. That a lot of the intervention, in addition to having rewards and punishments and behaviors and things like that, it involves trying to develop a real connection with that child. That's all.
Okay. And then, Paul, you want to get in the last shot for the commercial?
Yeah, I would agree with Leanne. I was struck when I read some of these scenarios that they did leave the 9-year-old alone with the 2-year-old. In fact, as I read it, I said, gee, I don't know if I'd want to be in the room with the 9-year-old myself, the way they painted this child. And I was struck how the descriptions, which I'm assuming they were accurately describing behaviors they observed, although, as Dave points out, they were in limited context, really mirrored what you tend to see in the media when they display a alleged child psychopath, as in Criminal Minds, Law and Order. This very steely, cold gaze, the ability to manipulate adults to the point that only at the very end of the program do they reveal, because it's Hollywood, right?
Sure.
That they did it on purpose. And that's what they reflected in this article, that the child, after having done things that some might see, or obviously some did see, as possibly psychopathic, would then, aha, see, I'm fooling you. I did it on purpose. So I was struck by that, the way they painted that picture.
Yeah.
Can I just throw one other thing in?
Sure.
This is the danger of being interviewed for an article. I don't know if this has happened to you guys, but very often when you're interviewed, only a small fraction of what you say is included, and it can often be quite misleading. So we have to be careful before we form conclusions about the people involved in these stories.
Okay, great. We got to take a commercial real quick. Can you guys hold on for one more segment?
Yes.
Okay, we'll be right back here on Aftermath Radio on K-Beach.
Hi, my name is Bob, and I'm a psychopath.
Hi, Bob!
Bob!
Do you know what a psychopath is? Do you have one in your life? How would you know? Join Dr. Robert Shugg Mondays at 4 p.m. for Aftermath Radio and get the facts about psychopathy.
Aftermath Radio.
Aftermath Radio.
All right, we're back. Aftermath Radio. Dr. Robert Shug, Assistant Professor of Criminal Justice and Forensic Psychology. I have three psychopathy experts on the line. We have Dr. Dave Kossin, Dr. Leanne Liedem, and Dr. Paul Babiak. We are doing the traditional Wheel of Controversy that we do at the semester's end, at the season finale of every semester, and discussing controversies in psychopathy. So the three of you are being uncharacteristically civil, but there's still time to change that if you want to step it up a notch. Are they there?
Give us a shot.
We're here.
Okay, great. So let's give the wheel a spin. The audience is especially excited to have you three on tonight. Just noting that. Okay, so the DSM-5 is the Diagnostic and Statistical Manual of Mental Disorders, the fifth edition. This is they've been threatening to release this onto the public for the past, what, 2 or 3 years now? Anyway, psychopathy as it fits into the DSM-5, and the three of us, or the four of us, rather, have certainly been following very closely how this is evolving. And I wanted, let's see, so the topic would be, you know, does psychopathy fit into the DSM-5, and is the DSM-5 committee getting it right? So who wants to start? Leanne, why don't we start with you?
Okay. So I'll say first how I think they're getting it right. I think they're finally starting to incorporate items from that would be both indicative of factor one of the PCLR and other items that would be indicative of factor two of the PCLR. And I see that as a tremendous step forward. And I would predict that the correlation between what they currently have and the PCLR is going to be even higher than the correlation between the DSM-4 and the PCLR.
And when you say factor one and factor two, Liam, just sort of briefly explain what that means.
Well, they have items that relate to both the interpersonal and affective symptoms of psychopathy, which would be factor one, and the lifestyle and the disinhibition aspect of psychopathy, which would be factor two.
Great. Okay. Good. Paul, what do you have to say?
Well, a while back when they started this and they opened this up for commentary and I took a look at it, I was of a mind that they should have the antisocial personality disorder and then have a psychopathic or psychopathy subtype to that. And they sort of moved in that direction and then backed away from that. And the more I look into this and the more I think about it and its application, especially some of the recent events in the American Psychiatric Association where they have taken issue with some of the other more significant changes that have upset a lot of people because of the implications for treatment, I think my preference would be that they actually split the two and that there be an antisocial personality disorder. There's a lot of research, a lot of history on that, so we can nail that one down. And certainly there's tons of research on psychopathy, pure and simple, and put that as a separate personality disorder. There may be overlaps, but I think for the diagnostician, it would be a lot easier to have two places to go and then do a differential diagnosis in order to select one over the other. Or in some cases, you might have combinations, so you'd have comorbidity. I think that'd be neater and cleaner.
Dave, what do you say?
Well, the first thing is I object to the idea that we're not usually civil. we have to keep in mind the changes that are being proposed right now for the DSM-5 are part of rather sweeping changes to the personality disorders category. There are really dramatic changes. You know, they're eliminating disorders. They're emphasizing impairments in self-functioning and interpersonal functioning for all the disorders. So it's really an attempt. To me, it seems like they're spinning a great wheel, and they're coming up with somewhat arbitrarily some important components of personality that have been identified in several studies as important. But they're it seems to me, pretending a little bit that there's more agreement than there really is, that these are the basis for all personality disorders, and even that all personality disorders can be hung on the same framework. That's my first concern. It's being treated as if there's more of a basis than there is. A related issue is what Paul said. You know, there's a bunch of research coming out now which indicates that people with antisocial personality disorder who lack psychopathic traits are different from people with antisocial personality disorder with psychopathic traits. And I understand that maybe, you know, it's not enough studies yet to have a big impact on this group, but if they don't take this research seriously in the DSM-5, then they're probably just going to have to admit they made a mistake in the DSM-6.
Okay, we got just a minute or two left, and this is obviously a topic that could fill an entire show, I understand, but did anyone want to take any parting shots at anything that's been said yet, or does anyone have anything additional they'd like to offer very quickly?
Oh, I would.
Okay, Lynn.
See, you have to realize that in DSM-4, to have a diagnosis of antisocial personality disorder, you only need 3 of the 8 things. So all that means is you picked a person who's less affected with the same disorder. In my view, there's no proof of 2 categorically different disorders. And in fact, the opposite is the case. Both antisocial personality disorder, the 3 of the 8 kind, and psychopathy, the 30 on the PCLR kind, are both associated with all of the same things. Problems with substance abuse and alcohol, you know, the same genetics, the same criminality, the same. And so no one has convinced me that the research shows that this is any more than a dose effect having to do with the dose of the same syndrome.
Okay. Paul, you want to take a parting shot?
Well, actually, I want to hear more from Leanne on I mean, this is very interesting what you're saying, Leanne. You're saying that, in fact, that there's so much of an overlap that they're similar, or are you saying that the way we pick 3 out of 8 is just not enough out of the 8? We should pick 7 or 8 out of 8.
Right, right. And if you do that, you get much closer correspondence between those who would be categorically assigned the psychopathy diagnosis and those who would be categorically assigned the ASPD diagnosis.
Now, Leanne and I will disagree on this point. I don't have time to get into all of the evidence, but I think if we cover more of the evidence, we will ultimately convince her of this. You know, I want to use the remaining minutes to talk about another issue.
Okay.
The DSM-5 is suggesting that there are specific personality traits, in addition to self-impairment and interpersonal impairment, in each personality disorder. And for some reason, they have emphasized for antisocial personality disorder, or what you might call psychopathy, the traits of antagonism and disinhibition. And I just want to suggest that this is absolutely true for some individuals with psychopathic features, that you really see this kind of pervasive hostility towards others and impulsivity. But there's also a lot of heterogeneity within people with psychopathic traits. And you see some people who are frequently as nice as can be, and sometimes when they're being nice, you don't end up deciding that it was all faked and all manipulative. And so I really think there's a kind of a oversimplification and, ignorance of the variability that's going to lead to a lot of trouble down the road if they don't tweak the system.
Okay, I'm going to have to end on that note, but it sounds like we could probably pick up this topic again in the fall and have a lot more to say about it then as well.
Yeah.
Want to thank the 3 of you, actually, for all the time you put in, you know, over this semester as well. You guys did some great shows, and we're looking forward to hearing from you again in the fall about, other exciting issues in psychopathy and maybe a little more friction and tension on the Wheel of Controversy shows.
Have a great summer.
Okay, have a good summer. We'll talk to you guys soon.
Take care.
All right, bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
All right, with that note, just want to encourage you to leave messages on the voicemail line, 562-912-3541, over the summer. We're constantly checking that. Love to play those on the air, get them together for shows in the fall. Skype us at aftermath.radio, and certainly send us emails, aftermathradio@kbeach.com. The website, aftermathradio.org, will /radio, or go to the radio link in the lower left-hand corner. All of our podcasts will be up there. Just give me a couple of weeks after the semester's over to put them up. I want to say thank you to both Chantal Fahmy and Gigi Bra for all the efforts you put in this semester and last semester. I think you made it a really great show and brought a whole new dimension to what we're trying to do here.
Thank you for having us.
And we wish you the best of luck. Me and the entire Aftermath Radio listening audience.
All right, everyone.
Have a great summer. We'll see you again in the fall. This is Dr. Robert Shugg signing off Aftermath Radio here on K-Beach.
You've been listening to Aftermath Radio, production of the K-Beach radio station at California State University, Long Beach. Produced in association with AftermathSurvivingPsychopathy.org. Your host has been Dr. Robert Shugg. Your producers have been Brian Frederick, Chantel Fahmy, and Gurjeet Brar. Join us next Monday at 4 p.m. for another exciting episode. If you or someone you know has been victimized and you'd like to talk to someone, call the Cal State Long Beach Counseling and Psychological Services number at 562-985-4001. Aftermath Radio.